look, I don't want to make this about a referee thing, but again, what does clear and obvious even mean, right? What's clear and obvious to me might not be to the next human. So, yeah, a lot of millions of people watch Two and a Half Men. I think it's the dumbest show ever. It's clear and obvious to me that it's terrible, but everyone watches it, so maybe I'm wrong, you know? So.
Hello, Sunshine. I'm Alexi Lawless, and welcome to the State of the Union podcast, where we look at the beautiful game on and off the field through the lens of red, white, and blue color glasses. This show, we'll be talking the EPL title choking, Wrexham creating world peace, the end of the Bundesliga era, M. Messi's KC barbecue, 2.5 Jim Curtins, a Geo sighting, historic U.S. soccer apparel, Samba's, Infantino being a super fan, what Jennifer did, and so much more. But first, joining me, as always, my friend, my colleague, my guiding light, David Mossy, a soccer savant and a Fox soccer researcher extraordinaire. Mossy, how you doing on this Monday, April 15th in the year 2024?
I'm doing well. You know, for my What Are We Watching? I did a 2.5 Men marathon this past week.
Well, for those that just heard that open, we'll get to Jim Curtin. It's going to make me laugh, and it's going to become a classic audio and video clip. So we'll get to Jim Curtin in a second. But what are you watching, my friend?
Couple things. Today is the 159-year anniversary of Abraham Lincoln's death. He was shot on the night of April 14th, died in the morning of April 15th. I went down a Lincoln rabbit hole this week, and I rewatched the Spielberg movie, Lincoln, and I started on Manhunt, the Apple TV show about the search for John Wilkes Booth. The final episode comes out this week, so I'm going to time my binge so that it all flows seamlessly.
Oh, I think I can do that. I think that I will allow that. Usually, as people know, I have to be able to start and end. But I think if you time it correctly like this. All right. Well, I'll be interested to hear what you say. I don't have a whole lot, but there's a new crime doc over there on Netflix. What Jennifer Did, about this teenager, young adult, if you will, convicted of a murder for hire plot against her parents up there in Toronto. By the way, when the Canadians do true crime, they don't mess around. I mean, you look back at the Ken and Barbie killer thing, and that crazy MF-er who was up there in decapitating and cannibalizing some dude on a Greyhound bus. So they don't mess around up there in Canada. This is a real disturbing look because, you know, ultimately, I'm not giving anything away, but this young girl, you know, tries to kill her parents and does kill one of them. And I just can't even imagine what that father who did survive is going through now, given that crazy story. So that's the true crime doc.
I have one more thing.
Oh, really? Okay.
On a lighter note.
Yeah.
Last night, CBS aired Billy Joel 100, his 100th That's show right. at Madison Square Garden as part of this
controversy,
residency.
Though.
How so?
They cut out, they dumped out on Billy Joel, right?
Correct. They needed to fit into a 2-hour window. So I think you can go on Paramount Plus and watch the whole thing, I believe. But I watched the 2 hours on CBS. It was phenomenal.
I saw somebody suggest over there on the social media platforms that it was payback time because if for those that remember Billy Joel history years and years ago on the Grammys, I think it was, he stopped in a performance mid song and just, I think he said like advertising dollars clicking away to make a point as if the advertising dollars didn't fund Billy Joel for much of his career and still do.
Now, you incurred the wrath of Aaron Schechter by not liking Springsteen. She's also a huge Billy Joel fan, so you have a chance to redeem yourself. Your thoughts on the piano man?
I'm good with Billy Joel, especially, I mean, I think he's a brilliant songwriter and a brilliant musician. I remember vividly buying Glass Houses, going down and buying the record of Glass Houses, you know, the single Still Rock and Roll to Me was a big thing. But that whole album and the way that he took almost a punk sensibility and melded it with his pop sensibility and his musicianship, if you will. I thought that was a brilliant album, and he just continued. And the hits that he have are just amazing. The writing, the lyrics combined with wonderful melodies.
I'm going to try to catch him at some point this year. Now, I'm going to be in New York in early May. I looked into that, but it was too expensive. He's coming to LA in October to play in the new Clippers Arena, which is right next to the Forum. And so hopefully I'll catch him there.
Oh, nice. Very cool. Very cool. For those that are watching the show, you will see my aesthetic today. As I've mentioned before, I have children, and at times they will raid, especially my teenage daughter will raid my closet for different stuff. And this generation now, it amuses me, but they find 90s fashion and culture and aesthetic to really kind of be appealing. And whether it's, you know, large stuff or even, you know, sweatshirts or high-waisted thing. Anyway, I am wearing a circa 1993-94 warm-up top for the U.S. men's national team. For those that are watching, you can see a picture of me in what looks like the same one, but it's actually, this would probably be 1993. And you can tell because where this says, and I'm pointing to it now, U.S. World Cup team on my left breast up here, on the picture here, it's just Adidas. And so when we first got together as a national team leading up to the 94 World Cup, this was the stuff that we were wearing. And it didn't yet show that we were the 2B World Cup team. As we moved on, while we still had the same look, this World Cup patch and this U.S. soccer patch came to be. And as we got closer and closer to 94. However, this ultimately wasn't the look that we used in 1994. As many people know, that was, you know, the famous denim type of stuff. I don't have the old denim sweatshirt that I have. And for those that are watching, you can see a picture of me here. And while I will, as the kids say, stand till the day I die for the denim jersey that we wore, when it comes to the actual warm-up jersey, they tried to combine both of them together in that there was the denim top and then the sleeves were the red and white stripes. And I hated this. I thought it looked horrible. And I thought it was a completely misguided type of melding of the two. So there's your trip down memory lane when it comes to things that I'm wearing. But for those that can see, it's a full-on 90s hefty bag type of fit. This would never pass today. But from a retro perspective, whether it's my teenagers or other younger folks out there, they would love to have this, but they can pry it from my cold, dead, redheaded hands.
I never knew you had a goatee back then.
Yeah, this is, I have no idea who these kids are, and they're no longer kids anymore. I don't know where they are, but this was, I don't know where we actually were making some sort of appearance, but that was, yeah, that was the jersey. You can see up in the upper left-hand patch under the U.S. soccer sign, it says, say no to drugs or something like that. So we were cognizant of that. And then this is the person that they put it on.
Yeah, you do look a little stoned in that
picture.
Not
the greatest advertiser for that. But, you know, what are you going to do? All right, now, shall we light this candle, my friend?
Let's do it.
Where shall we start?
We begin in England. Some major developments in the Premier League title race this past weekend. Manchester City handled their business on Saturday. They beat Luton Town 5-1. And then both Liverpool and Arsenal lost at home on Sunday. Liverpool 1-0 to Crystal Palace. Eze with the goal there. And then Arsenal 2-0 to Aston Villa. Bailey and Watkins with the goals in that one. So the weekend ends with the champs back on top. City at 73 points. Arsenal and Liverpool at 71 with 6 rounds remaining.
I mean, on the surface, this is an amazing turn of events. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I think when we left off last week in previewing and talking about this, we were both in agreement that these were going to be fait accomplis to the extent that they can be. The teams that were vying for the title in this three-team race, we thought that they were going to have no problems. Obviously, a couple of them did, and it's thrown this into disarray. Do you think that this was the weekend when it was lost, if you're talking about Arsenal and Liverpool, and it was this the weekend that it was won, ultimately, by Manchester City, in that there are no surprises? Keep in mind, everybody has 6 games left, if I'm not mistaken here.
Correct.
And everybody's been analyzing, you know, where they're going, who they're playing and all that, and the run-in and all that kind of stuff. But just on the surface here, is it over?
I'm not going to say that. I mean, when you're in a title race with City, you blink and you could be in trouble. But the only thing I'll say is fixture congestion could be an issue for them. They're still in the FA Cup. They play Chelsea this upcoming weekend. And if they advance, likely Manchester United in the final. I think they're going to advance in the Champions League. So they're also going to have that to contend with, while Liverpool are probably going to get knocked out of the Europa League. They're down 3-0 to Atalanta on aggregate. So that's going to be a lot more games for City to deal with. Already, they were scheduled to play away to Tottenham this upcoming weekend, but because they have the FA Cup semifinal, that's been moved to the midweek in between their second to last and last Premier League game. So maybe fixture congestion will get them, but you never want to be behind City at this point in the campaign.
Right. And if anybody has the depth to deal with this type of either platooning and the possibility, knock on wood, there aren't, but there the possibility with all these games in such a short period of time and back and forth and travel and all that kind of stuff, there could be injuries. Is this, and the results that we saw this weekend, you know, which one is more surprising to you? And by the way, these were not just losses of games, but these were losses at home when you talk about Arsenal and Liverpool. Which one of these is more surprising? Obviously, Aston Villa, just in a normal world, I think most people would agree, is a better team than Palace. But, you know, this is also a Liverpool that we know has plenty of injuries. And it's for Klopp, he's just kind of limping into the end here.
That one surprised me more because, as you mentioned, Aston Villa is a good team. They're fighting for top four. So it's not beyond the realm of possibility they could go to the Emirates and get a result. I am absolutely stunned that Liverpool lost at home to Crystal Palace. You know, on Thursday, we taped our show right after their Europa League defeat to Atalanta. Yep. I went to speak to our boss, Zach Kenworthy, a big Liverpool fan, and he was worried that the wheels might be coming off. But I sort of rolled my eyes. I thought that was just him being, you know, pessimistic. I thought for sure they would bounce back and take care of Crystal Palace at home. So I was stunned by that result.
All right. So this is a kind of a catnip type of question to you. But does this in any way tarnish Jurgen Klopp in that he is limping into the end here as opposed to going out a lion?
No, it does not. Okay. And we'll see how the rest of the games go. I mean, you're allowed one stumble without it being considered a choke. But if they have a couple more results like this, then we are going to look at this Liverpool run-in at the end of the season more negatively. But, you know, so we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, and again, to your point in defending, I guess, Klopp and this Liverpool team, this is a far cry from what we associate with Klopp in terms of how awesome he has been with this Liverpool team. No excuse, and I don't think he would make that excuse, but the reality is, as opposed to Arsenal, which we talked about, the narrative was, well, they've gotten over the hump and they've learned how to be able to get it to the end, and yet they stumble here. Is there a danger, or maybe it's already happened, that creeping feeling of, wait a second, maybe we don't deserve to be here, or we don't have the players, more importantly, the mentality in those players to actually be the champions, as opposed to City, where you mentioned, yes, they have a lot of games, but if there ever was a team built for winning and figuring out a way and smelling blood, which they have to have smelled right now, it's City.
Yes, because of what happened last season with Arsenal, our antennas are up with them, and you do wonder if this could be the start of the wheels falling off again.
So, you think, and let this be true, that we are going to have a crying, whimpering, and I guess irate Piers Morgan by the end of this season.
I do.
Oh, let it be. Let it happen. I love you, Piers. What else?
We got an Ask Alexi question about Gio's performance for Nottingham Forest this past weekend, so we'll revisit the Premier League down there. But right now we're going to move down three levels to League Two. Wrexham, with a 6-0 home win over Forest Green this past weekend, Paul Mullen scored twice. And with this result, Wrexham secure back-to-back promotions. They will move up to League One next season. Incredible scenes as their fans celebrate. But we know with Wrexham, it quickly turns into a discussion in this country about Pro Rel and about whether this is truly a romantic story. I know you have a lot of thoughts on that, so go ahead.
Well, first off, the power of Wrexham, I think, is recognized in this moment that we are even talking about them. Because if this was anybody but Wrexham, we would not be. And it's not that there aren't scenes. We see scenes every year for teams that come up in terms of promotion. They're excited. This story, obviously, for a certain audience out there, has captivated them. Whether they are into the game of soccer or not. And that's more power to Wrexham and obviously to one of the Ryans, right? One of the Ryan Phillip, not Phillip, Ryan
Gosling? Reynolds.
Reynolds, sorry. And the other guy, too. So these two faces of this team, congratulations to them as owners, and congratulations to Wrexham for doing what was promised to them. How it's been done, I don't want to hear of anything about merit, okay? It's been done by outspending the opponents and getting what you pay for. Doesn't always work out like that, but obviously in this situation, they have not only spent more, but they have spent wisely in order to get them to that promised land that I guess is the ultimate goal, which is becoming part of the EPL and going up and up and up and up and up. Wrexham is, as I said, a wonderful story. I enjoy it. I don't watch the show, not because of any reason other than it just has never been something that I want to watch. But I know that there's a lot of people that that do watch it. When it comes to the impact of Wrexham, Mossy, how important or unimportant do you think it is relative to the American soccer culture?
Let me read you an interesting back and forth on X before I address that question.
Okay.
Max Bretos, Wrexham made a long, struggling community whole, and it's a genius project by Ryan and Rob. But to label this the magic of Pro-Rel is disingenuous. They were favorites to come up. League Two clubs can't compete with their money, sponsors, and resources. Not plucky underdogs, but a juggernaut.
Ooh.
And then 11 Yanks responded, the magic of Pro-Rel incentivizes investment and allows well-run clubs to earn their place on the field, not because some billionaire paid an expansion fee. But you know this, Max. You're just carrying water for your employers as usual.
Wow. So, wow, our friend Max Bretos taking it.
Yes.
But giving it, too. And I like it. And I like the discussion of what Wrexham is and what Wrexham isn't. And as we know, people use it for all sorts of arguments.
The disconnect here is that American sporting culture is steeped in parity and a level playing field. So any situation where the success came about because you had rich owners that spent more money than the opposition, in your mind, that undercuts the notion of romance and meritocracy. But in Europe, it doesn't. They do see romance in rich celebrities choosing to invest in this small lower division club. And they see the fact that they're moving up by winning on the field as much more meritocratic than an expansion team in MLS, which is just writing Don Garber a big check.
Yeah. I mean, so, you know, we will talk later in the pod about defining words, and your definition of meritocracy might be different than mine. But when people throw out merit oftentimes relative to Wrexham, it does get me to roll my eyes sometimes.
But to the question you asked me, there was a clip on CBS Sports today. Somebody made the case that they think Wrexham has done more for the growth of soccer in this country than MLS. And I think that's overstating it a bit.
I don't think Wrexham has done a damn thing. relative to the growth of soccer, and certainly relative to Major League Soccer, it's an apples and oranges type of thing. I mean, I'm not saying it's not a wonderful story, and I'm not saying that it doesn't invite, it's like catnip to people to comment on it. But that's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. All right. Anyway, congratulations to Wrexham going forward, and you know, look forward to following the continued growth of this team and for what it means for the city of Wrexham and for what it means for, more importantly, the American owners.
Also, incredible scenes in Leverkusen this weekend. They hammered Werder Bremen 5-0. Boniface, Xhaka, and a Florian Wirtz hat-trick accounting for the goals. With this result, Leverkusen clinched their first ever Bundesliga title with five rounds to spare. For the first time since 2012, somebody other than Bayern Munich are German champions.
So how good is this from Xavi? Is this in the annals?
I would use the term mind-boggling. Ooh. He took over early last season when they were 17th in the table, second to last, got him up to sixth, and then this season he wins the title. They're 16 points clear of Bayern. They're unbeaten in 43 matches in all competitions this season. They're in the German Cup final against Kaiserslautern. They're probably going to win that. And they've got a good shot at winning the Europa League as well. It is one of the incredible jobs we've ever seen in European football.
Oh, well, that's a ringing endorsement. And I would second that in for all the different things that you said. And again, this is a star player, and we have time and time again seen where star players don't necessarily make star coaches. And yet, when it comes to someone like Jose Mourinho, he evidently saw this coming 4 years ago, talking about Xavi Alonso and what he potentially could be, and laying out why he thought all of the coaches that he had, his pedigree, his experience as a player, would make him a coach. And again, it doesn't always work. So congratulations to Bayer Leverkusen. Congratulations to everybody there for doing something that we have kind of cried out for years now and the last decade relative to Bayern Munich's dominance. And to your point, I think, Mossy, the kudos and the praise are warranted and completely fair and should not stop for this man and for what he has done.
Incidentally, Sean Sullivan included in the rundown, cool clip of Pep talking about Xabi Alonso. And then when you click on the link, it's actually Jose Mourinho talking about him.
It is. And as I said, he goes through all of the reasons back then why he thought he was going to be a good manager.
We know Sean can get a little confused sometimes. He recently walked into a women's bathroom.
That's true. That's true. It happens. It happens to all of us. I the other day, I stood outside for a good 30 seconds. And I think everybody's been there where it's like Russian roulette, right? Because now the graphics that they use oftentimes can be confusing. And so I sat there. I didn't want to offend anybody. And I didn't want to also out myself and say and ask somebody what was going on. And finally, I just took a deep breath and went into one. And then I come back to the table and was informed by the people that they're all the same anyway. And so there was no differentiation, which is why I was so confused at the time.
But all yeah, right. Xabi Alonso did have, to bring it back to that, did have incredible schooling. He played under Rafa Benitez, Jose Mourinho, Carlo Ancelotti, and Pep Guardiola. So he learned from some of the best, and he's borrowed stuff from all of them, and here he is doing great things himself.
All right. Well, we'll see. We'll see. He said he's going to stay, which is good, but I think there's also a curiosity as to where that next and when that next step comes.
Next up, we go to Italy. Serie A this past weekend, Udinese played Roma, and Roma defender Evan Ndika collapsed during the match with chest pains. The match was suspended. He was rushed to the hospital. It sounds like he's going to be okay, but a very scary moment.
It's scary, especially given, the problems that we have seen, and sometimes, the horrible moments that we have seen that at times have led to death and at times to led better stories. This also, I think, when all the tests have been done for everything that we have read so far, it doesn't seem to be what they thought it was relative to a heart attack or, something going on. Obviously something happened, but the seriousness of it after all of the tests may be less than what it was. But thankfully he is okay. And we'll see when he gets back out of the hospital and then eventually gets back onto the field. So good news there.
I'm going to go off rundown here for a minute.
Okay.
AC Milan 3-3 draw away to Sassuolo. They rotated because they have one eye on that Europa League quarterfinal second leg against Roma, which means Christian Pulisic didn't start. He came on as a sub. Musa did start and got an assist.
Good. Good. I mean, but it doesn't change the fact that Musa is still looked at as a substitute or a starter when the quote-unquote starters aren't there.
And then Juve 0-0 away to Torino in the derby. Weston McKennie started for the second straight game. Timmy Weah, an unused sub.
Not good. Not good for him. But, I can't remember her name, but I just was just reading about it earlier over there in the NWSL, a player who's been with the team for 4 months, isn't playing or whatever, and, wants trades and all that kind of stuff. And yeah, you only have one career and it's finite and you want to be in places where you're playing. And so you have to balance, is this a situation that's not going to get better? Or is this a situation where if I work harder, it will get better? And I think for all of these players that we are talking about, whether it's Weah or Moose and stuff like that, they're going to have to balance that this summer as to find out if it's time to move on or, I do see an opening. And maybe it's me or maybe it's just a passage of time that can change what's going on.
Dropping down a level to City B, Venezia with a 2-0 home win over Brescia. Tanner Tessman with both goals. Venezia near the top of the table. They're trying to get themselves promoted to Serie A, which would give us more Americans in the Italian top flight.
It would. As long as Tanner Tessman, and in this case, certainly this is obvious, is looked at as one of the players that brings them up. But we all know, Mossy, that when you're promoted into a new league, and whether it's Wrexham finding that or anybody else out, you also look down the line at what you had and even what brought you there. And you don't always dance with the ones that brought you in that they make changes, they upgrade. Obviously, they have more money to be able to do that kind of stuff. But from a Tanner Tessman perspective, I think that they would, if they were to come up, I think that they would look at him as somebody that could continue in Serie A.
Sean Sullivan's Bologna evidently being linked with him. And speaking of Sean Sullivan, this match was played in Venice, a city Sean will not visit during his honeymoon in Italy.
It's too bad because it's, well, obviously it's an amazing city, but it's also an amazing little stadium that they have right there. Just, you know, nestled in to the, you know, to the city and the canals there. It's really an interesting thing. If you ever get a chance to look at it from a bird's eye view type of thing, it's right there. There's not a lot of parking.
We go to the Netherlands next. This past weekend, PSV with a 6-0 win over Vitesse in the Eredivisie. Pepe did not play due to injury. Dest and Tillman did. Tillman scored a goal on a play that originated with a Dest cross. I saw a lot of conversation on X about Malik Tillman and why can't he reproduce his club form for the national team. Very good for PSV, but he's been kind of disappointing for the U.S.
Well, maybe because he plays for PSV in the Eredivisie, and that's a completely different circumstance and situation than when he gets with the national team. But you know, all things being equal, yes, you obviously we want him scoring. He is doing that, but it's very possible that he becomes one of those players that from a club perspective, he's able to do it. And then when he puts on that jersey, things just change. Maybe they change tactically. Maybe they change physically. Maybe they change mentally. Whatever it ends up being. But Pepe's agent didn't say anything this week, right? Are we good with that?
I haven't seen any fresh comments.
Okay, good. All right. Well, Pepe probably, you know, said, hey, cool it. You're killing me over here.
PSV could clinch the title on Thursday, by the way. Next up, UEFA Champions League quarterfinal second legs this week. On Tuesday, Barcelona will host PSG. Barcelona with a 3-2 aggregate lead.
All right, so I have PSG going through. I don't want to change it after the first leg. But I still have them, but Barcelona's got to be feeling it right now after that first leg win away.
Yes, I think Barcelona will go through. Dortmund.
But you're changing that, right? Didn't you? Did you have Barcelona and Rich? Well, whatever. Okay, but it's okay. You can change it.
I don't recall.
All right. I'm going to stay PSG.
Dortmund host Atletico Madrid. Dortmund looking to overturn a 2-1 deficit.
I don't think that they overturn it. I think Atletico finds a way. I think they get ugly in the most beautiful sense and ride it out.
I agree. I think Atletico go through. Then Wednesday in Munich, Bayern host Arsenal 2-2 on aggregate.
After what we just talked about when it comes to the Bundesliga and all eggs in this basket for Bayern, and yet they all seem to be saying, don't worry, when we go to this well, it's going to be full. But I am going to say that Bayern Munich find a way out of this. And they were really good in that first leg. So they have to be buoyed coming home right now. So Bayern go through.
I do lean Bayern as well after Arsenal lost this past weekend. As I mentioned, I think this could be a wheels coming off moment for them. So I think they get knocked out in the Champions League as well. And then Manchester City hosts Real Madrid. It's 3-3 on aggregate.
What do they call it? Banana peel type of situation here after what we just talked about and the glee, even though it might not be outward, might be inward in terms of what happened with the EPL situation on the weekend. You think that they, I'm talking about Man City, come in overconfident?
Perhaps, but I think they're the better team. They're at home. De Bruyne and Kyle Walker expected back after they missed the first leg.
Unsick De Bruyne.
So I do favor City to advance.
I'm with you. Okay, cool. Well, that should be fun to see. What else, Mossy?
Very quickly, we also have the Europa League quarterfinal second legs. AC Milan will go to Rome trying to overturn a 1-0 deficit. You've got Atalanta looking to protect that 3-0 lead at home against Liverpool after that stunning result last week. Leverkusen away to West Ham looking to protect a 2-0 lead, and Benfica up 2-1 on Marseille going to France to protect that lead. So it should be a fun week of European action.
Awesome. Awesome. Can I just circle all the way back to the beginning just for a second as a question to you, because I'm always curious what you think, and a question to our viewers. Leon Bailey, right? We've been watching him for years. Is he, from a CONCACAF perspective, where is he in terms of how he has done this year when you start ranking him with Christian Pulisic and others out there? How high would you put him? Would you say he's the best?
Remember, he missed the Nations League Final Four for disciplinary reasons.
Well, that's fine. I mean, he's got some problems off the field, but...
Yeah, and overall, hasn't made the impact with Jamaica that I would have expected. You know, a Premier League star, you figure, is going to go to CONCACAF and be on a different level, and it hasn't quite played out that way.
No, I'm talking specifically about Europe, specifically about playing from a club perspective.
Oh, I think he's a good player, yeah.
But would you rank him ahead of what he's doing from a club perspective? Would you rank him ahead of Christian Pulisic?
No,
would you rank him ahead of Weston McKennie?
No, I think those two guys I would put ahead of him. Okay. Yeah.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, We got some MLS action to talk about. Okay, welcome back. Ooh, all sorts of interesting action when it comes to MLS and stateside here. Where should we start, Moss?
The big one, Sporting KC hosted Inter Miami at Arrowhead Stadium. More than 72,000 on hand, the fourth largest crowd in MLS history, and they were treated to a good show. Inter Miami won 3-2. Messi with a lovely assist to Diego Gomez and then a sensational strike. Suarez scored as well. Tommy got both SKC goals. What a game.
Not just an incredible game, but an incredible moment. And, you know, the competition on the field was great, was enjoyable, was fun to watch, was competitive, was back and forth. The environment, as you mentioned, was as good as it can get, as far as I'm concerned. 72,000 people in old Arrowhead Stadium. Yours truly used to play back there in front of a couple thousand people. It is a cavern, but when 72,000 people show up, you know, that's what you want. And obviously, there were a lot of Messi fans. There was a lot of pink in the stands. But that's okay. That's you know, that's what Messi, arguably the greatest player ever to play the game, will do and consistently has done. And as we say, speaking of consistently, Messi once again, when all the cameras are on him, when all the eyeballs are on him, he delivers. And not just delivers, but delivers in a way that makes you go ooh and ah. And all of those people that bought tickets for this game, and so many people that either aren't Sporting KC fans or aren't even soccer fans necessarily, because it was an event. You just had to be there if you were from Kansas City and into any kind of sports or any kind of popular culture. They were given multiple moments of Messi magic. And keep in mind, this is coming off of a disappointment for Inter Miami in CONCACAF Champions Cup, a game in which down in Mexico, Messi did not show up. Well, he showed up. He showed up here, as did his friend Suarez. And so it was almost a perfect night, except you probably would switch around the home team winning and Messi losing, because you got your Messi fix, but the home team, which actually started out well, couldn't end up finishing off Peter Vermes and Sporting KC lose at home in front of 72,000 to Inter Miami.
And there was a playing out of the back moment in that game that we'll revisit in the Ask Alexi segment.
We will. And you know, again, I want to kind of give people a little bit of perspective as to how far we've come, because I often get either questions or comments thrown on me about, you know, where we are, where we're going and all that. You know, I remember playing for, back then it was the Kansas City Wizards. They had gone from the Kansas City Wiz to the Kansas City Wizards. And keep in mind, this is the first game in Arrowhead Stadium since I think 2008. They finished in 2007, 2008-ish. And then they moved into the baseball stadium and then into Sporting Park. And the rest is history from their, you know, a place of their own. But all of that is to say is, you've come a long way, baby, as the saying goes. And, you know, Kansas City proved that they are a soccer city. I think this is a wonderful harbinger of things to come, especially relative to 2026 and what it can be and ultimately what it is. So congratulations to everybody there for putting on a show. Even though the home team didn't win, again, you got a lot of people into that tent that maybe have not been there ever before. And many of them will not stay in that tent, but some will stay. And in that sense, it's a really good thing what happened there. Who's the quarterback over there for the Chiefs of Kansas City?
Patrick Mahomes.
Patrick Mahomes. I saw him meeting Messi. Wouldn't take off his sunglasses or anything like that. But, you know, that's how that dude rolls and everything. So everybody wants a moment with this incredible player. Again, people that aren't even into soccer, but obviously he's into soccer, especially with his wife and the NWSL situation that they have going on.
Does that bother you, people that keep their sunglasses on during social situations?
I think it's a little weird. Yeah. I think it's, I want to look into somebody's eyes. And if, you know, if you're outside, but this was, I think in the locker room area, something like that. It was a little weird, you know, and I get it. You don't want to have that moment, and maybe you have a sunglass sponsor that you're working for, but yeah, take off your sunglasses, man. Come on.
Atlanta, Philadelphia, also a great game. Finished 2-2. All the goals in the second half. Rios and Wiley scored for Atlanta. Then Ura and Wagner scored for Philly. Some interesting officiating stuff at the end of this game. The second Philly goal originated from what Atlanta thought was an illegal throw-in. Then Philadelphia had a go-ahead goal disallowed for a very tight offsides decision that stood up after a VAR review because VAR did not spot a clear and obvious error. More on that in a second. And then there was also debate as to when the match ended, when the referee blew the final whistle, when one of the teams was attacking. But to go back to that Philly disallowed go-ahead goal, again, it was because there was no clear and obvious error. We played this clip at the top of the show. We're going to revisit it. Here was Jim Curtin addressing this concept of clear and obvious.
Yeah, look, I don't want to make this about a referee thing, but again, what does clear and obvious even mean, right? What's clear and obvious to me might not be to the next human. So, yeah, a lot of millions of people watch 2.5 Men. I think it's the dumbest show ever. It's clear and obvious to me that it's terrible, but everyone watches it. So maybe I'm wrong, you know? So we could go on and on what clear and obvious means. Again, not a referee rant at all, just more of a technology rant.
Oh, man, I love Jim Curtin so much for so many different reasons. And if you've listened to this show for any length of time, you will know that I extol the virtues of him, not just as a coach, very good coach, but also just as a wonderful human being and an interesting human being. And I love that in his wonderful, dry, but incredibly humorous way, he does point out the reality of the situation and that it is still subjective. Now, keep in mind, this is a Philadelphia team that came back in this game. And, you know, that's actually a knock on Atlanta for going up. By the way, again, in front of a huge crowd, 40,000+, again, for all of you MLS haters out there. Another big crowd, but they were not rewarded in that they were up. Should have been 3 points. Atlanta should have not only gotten 3 points, but been the first team to actually beat Philadelphia this year. But Philadelphia just comes right back. And to Jim Curtin's point, even was going for the winner there. And while I know it's not, according to him, a referee rant, it is kind of a referee rant. And I love the way he framed it. And it would not have surprised anybody if Philadelphia ultimately had found a way to get a win. Because once they started coming, they did not stop. And Atlanta had no answer whatsoever for Philadelphia. But again, kudos to Jim Curtin for giving us a wonderful clip, for giving us a wonderful quote, a wonderful bite there that we can use, talking about the reality of the situation. We still have human beings. As much technology that we still have human beings running this technology, and they are there with their baggage and their history and their bias, and ultimately they are making a human subjective type of analysis and decision, especially relative to this, you know, quote unquote, clear and obvious type of situation.
Do we think he's talking Charlie Sheen era or Ashton Kutcher era of 2.5 Men?
Interesting. I am with him in that. I mean, I watch it and it was ubiquitous, especially when it comes to reruns, and you can still find it there now, but it was much more just kind of like background noise. I didn't say, oh my God, 2.5 Men are on, I got to go watch it. So I get what he's saying. I don't think he cares what form it ultimately took, but incredibly successful. And to his point, for a lot of people, it's clearly and obviously a great show.
Moving on, the LA Galaxy with a 3-1 away win over Vancouver. All the goals in the second half. Jovalich scored to make it 1-0 Galaxy. Then Brian White equalized. Then the Galaxy retook the lead on a sensational goal. Puig with a lovely through ball to Paintsill. And Diego Fagundes late. The Galaxy back atop the Western Conference.
So we talked earlier about Messi, and he had a goal and an assist. And there was a lot of ooing and awing over Messi's assist. And, you know, maybe we've become complacent to it, and we just expect it. I think that not only is Puig's pass better, but I think it deserves more praise. You know, ultimately, this is a win. Ricky Puig, we've talked about how good he is. And at times over the last couple of years, he's been the only good thing when it comes to the Los Angeles Galaxy. And now they've made the changes. They are while they're solid defensively, certainly not on set pieces, that still remains a problem. But this is a team that finds ways to win. And again, this is a team that went to a difficult place against what in 2024 is a difficult team and found a way to come out winners through a number of different efforts, including Ricky Pouge with just a splendid ball that cuts out three or four people. He sees it in the back of his head. If Messi had hit that, people would be ooing and awing at a whole nother level.
Yeah, so right now, Inter Miami atop the East and the Galaxy atop the West. One final game, St. Louis 1-0 home win over Austin. Brazilian João Klaus with the only goal. St. Louis pick up just their second victory of the season.
This is only their second victory. Well, we knew there was going to be an obvious regression and they weren't going to come up and surprise anybody. I'm talking about St. Louis now. And Austin continues to be hot seat city when it comes to Josh Wolf and what is going on there. And this is not going to help. But this might kick something on when it comes to St. Louis with Klaus, who at times has been in, at times he hasn't. This is what they needed. Again, the environment there looked wonderful. And yes, it was a soccer-specific stadium. So in this weekend of 72,000 and 40,000 here or there, this was just a regular, if you will, sellout type of situation. But the good folks of St. Louis got to go home with the home team winning, thanks to Klaus.
That is it.
All right, let's take another quick break. When we come back, it's time for Ask Alexi. Okay, welcome back. It's time for Ask Alexi, that part of the show where you send in your comments, questions, and concerns. You can do the old social media platforms out there using the hashtag Ask Alexi. And keep in mind that our handle on social media is SOTU with Alexi. Or you can call into our State of the Union podcast hotline, which is 657-549-2297. 657-549-2297. And listen, keep it brief, all right? You want to get on the show? The best and the easiest way to do it is don't bore us. Get to the chorus, keep it brief, all right? We're getting some long diatribes here, and it's just impossible for producer Sean to edit, and so we end up having to pass you by. Even if you're trying to say something good, and it's okay. You can rehearse. Just, you know, write it down even. I don't care. But just you know. You know what I'm talking about here. The other thing is, for those that download the show and you see us in your feed, you will have noticed that there are additional elements now in your feed. We're calling them best bites, which is basically, as it says, a little bite of the show. And it ends up being, I don't know, 5 to 10 minutes we take out of a show. I know that there's a lot of you out there that listen to it from start to finish, and we love that you do that. And so this will just be a refresher, a repeat. But there are also others out there that might want, like we said, just a nice little appetizer, if you will. And so we appreciate those that do listen to those, and we just thought we'd make those available out there for people that are bringing it down on the feed. Mossy, what do the people want to know this show?
First up, a question on X. Ed Ritter asks, Gio starting and getting an assist, positive development? What he's alluding to is this past weekend in the Premier League, Nottingham Forest played to a 2-2 draw against Wolves. Gio did make his first start for Forest, played about 70 minutes, played well, and got himself an assist on a corner, which he took, and Morgan Gibbs-White headed in. So I would say definitely a positive development.
Well, first off, let's go specific to the corner, because we have talked about the inefficiency that, as good as Christian Pulisic is, it is, you know, maybe his Achilles heel is the set pieces and just the consistently bad set pieces. And so if Gio Reyna is going to play a big part from a national team perspective on the field, there has to be, I think, a real come to Jesus moment as to who is going to take those. So it was nice to see him not only get on the score sheet with an assist there, but to do it in that fashion, which could possibly help the U.S. national team going forward. Now, you don't need me to tell you that Gio starting and Gio playing after what has been an absolutely abysmal time in terms of this loan to Forest is a good thing. Yes, it's a good thing. Does it change who Gio is as a player? No. Does it change, I think, how Forest in general look at him going forward? No. I think they have gotten plenty of looks at what Gio is and what Gio is. And I think that they have made the determination long ago that this is not somebody for the long haul. This is not somebody that they want to count on. He's a good player to them. I don't think they look at him as a great player. and this is just going to grind out to the end. But if in that grinding, Gio Reyna is getting playing time, obviously that's a good thing. But again, I don't think that this has fundamentally changed the way Gio's time here at Forest has gone, certainly, but is going to go.
On a sour note, Bournemouth played to a 2-2 home draw against Manchester United this past weekend. Tyler Adams sat out again with back spasms.
Oh my gosh. I mean, I feel bad for him in that he has obviously literally suffered physically now for the last, you know, year and a half with some serious injuries. And again, we don't know how connected, literally connected in terms of his body, these injuries are. And I just hope they are being overly cautious with him and making sure that he is as good as he can possibly be before getting him back out on the field. And it's probably killing him. And I'd be interested to know if there was a moment when this happened or if this just is a something thing that is chronic with him, that he just wakes up, as people that do have bad back problems do. Sometimes you either put yourself in the wrong position or you wake up one morning and it's just not happening.
Next up, not really a question. We'd like you to address a back and forth you had on X.
Oh, okay.
So the context here is last week you were very frustrated with the mistakes playing out of the back that Columbus and Inter Miami made in CONCACAF Champions Cup play. Then fast forward to this weekend, SKC made a mistake against Inter Miami, which led to a Luis Suarez goal. You posted the clip of the play and then added sarcastically the romance of playing out of the back.
Yeah.
Some guy named Dubsaholic said, "You're the dad at youth soccer games screaming, 'Just boot it.'" And then you replied, "You're the dad at youth soccer games screaming about XG, Zone 14, and calling everyone mate while giving a sideline lecture on your recent life-changing trip to Anfield and why Wrexham spending is so romantic, all while wearing a tracksuit with Sambas, but I love you."
Yeah, it caught me in a moment there. Okay, so a couple of things here. When I talk about playing out of the back, it's not that I can't see the beauty. And yes, I will use the word the romance of playing out of the back when it is done correctly. But in this day and age, and again, to what's his name? Dubsaholic, all right? He took it to a youth soccer type of discussion. And that was not what I was saying by any stretch of the imagination. As you know, Masi, as I've said time and time again, I have very little time when it comes to youth development in terms of entertainment and performance. I have plenty of time when it comes to how important it can be for ultimately making the professional players that make up the professional teams that then I am commenting on, which is what I was commenting on here. And so if and when there are teams that are, like I said, idealistic and romantic and the farthest thing from pragmatic, and they want to die on that playing out of the back hill at the professional level, that are selling tickets, that are on television, and it doesn't work out, yeah, I think that it's fair for them to come into criticism. And I know that the risk-reward balance that existed back in the 80s and the 90s and even in the early aughts has fundamentally changed. And there is a whole segment of coaches, a whole segment of players, and a whole segment of fans that accept it. And yet, ultimately, it's still about winning. And there is nothing yet that trumps winning. And so you can be as romantic as you possibly want. You know, my clap back here at Dubsaholic was, again, and evidently he's a coach. And so thank you, Dubsaholic, first and foremost, for your time and your energy and your patience, let's be honest, for coaching young players out there. Now, you obviously are a devotee of playing out of the back, which is great. You know, you have a style and this is what you want to do. And if in that moment when your team is playing out of the back, and they lose the ball, so oftentimes in very dangerous areas, and it comes right back down their throat, and you let in a goal, you might say, yes, but I'm taking the long-term approach, and it's okay, because if they do it enough, they're going to be individually and collectively at a level where when they get to that next level, they'll be able to do it, and it's not going to be that big a thing. Fine. I just think it's really interesting, and I think at times it's incredibly frustrating that it has become such a norm and such something to cling on to in terms of your credibility and, again, in terms of your romance, even at the highest level. And yet, individually and collectively, we are seeing teams and players do it that don't have the capacity to do it. And that, I think, is problematic. And that, I think, is worthy of criticism. So you continue doing what you're doing over there. I do hope that you are letting your players play. And that's why, you know, I see time and time again that there is a new generation of American soccer coach out there that has been so indoctrinated that he or she is out there spouting all of these platitudes and all of these buzzwords and jargon out there, when half the time they have no idea what the hell they're talking about or no idea what they actually mean, but it's just done to make themselves look good in front of others or to make themselves feel good. And, you know, the thing about the aesthetic and all that kind of stuff, I apologize to the people out there when it comes to sambas. I will say that while I love Adidas and I was a partner of Adidas for years and I still have friends that work at Adidas and they are still very, very good to me, I do think that sambas are a ridiculous shoe. And I know that they are now iconic, and I know that in the soccer world, oftentimes they are ubiquitous, but I don't think that they look good. I don't think that they feel good. And I can't for the life of me realize or understand how they have become so popular.
There's one sponsorship down the drain.
But I do love you, Dubsaholic. All right. And thank you for being a coach out there. Anything else from Ask Alexi standpoint?
That's it, mate.
Look at you. All right. Listen, let's finish this up here with the one for the road. It's the end of our show. And at the end of each and every show, I give you my one for the road. Mossy, our good friend Johnny Infantino has been visiting our shores, so much so that he actually showed up and gave a presentation, evidently, at the MLS owners meeting right here in Los Angeles last week. Is that true?
Correct. And in that presentation, he urged MLS to think big and bold. And because you've used that exact same language on this podcast, we've deduced that he must have gotten that from you.
Well, the titans of industry and the leaders and the power brokers and the kingmakers, if you will, out there, they all listen to the State of the Union podcast. We know that. They want to be informed. They want to be entertained. And let's be honest, you know, they want their content generated for them, whether it's public or whether it's private here. I joke, but what Johnny Infantino is saying to them is something that, yes, I've said all for the last couple of years, but I'm not alone. There's plenty of people that are talking about this ramp up to 26. And also, let's be honest, Johnny Infantino is not telling the MLS ownership in that situation anything that they don't know. It is coming from Johnny Infantino. And obviously, Johnny Infantino and FIFA have a vested interest in the next 5 years, let's say, in the United States, what's going on and beyond. And so there is a power and a weight to Johnny Infantino talking to the MLS owners. While Johnny Infantino has power, and while I like that he's saying things that are music to my and many others' ears and echo what we are talking about and what we are desperate for and begging for, I'm not sure that it is going to change anything. Maybe a little bit. And even if it's just planting a seed, I'm good with that. We saw that there were some rule changes, not even close to what I or Johnny Infantino or others would want. But as we said before, we love to spend other people's money. However, this constant beating of this drum, I think, is good, because I do think that there are plenty of MLS owners there that do want to do something big and bold relative to 2026. And come this offseason, I would expect more things to happen. And come next summer and come next offseason leading up to 2026. And yes, I know the circus will leave town, but Johnny Infantino is absolutely right, because this is a moment that needs to be captured. This is a moment that is ripe for doing big, bold things in the game. And to the victor will go the spoils. And the spoils are this American soccer culture that once again is not only going to come together, but it's going to come together in a way that we have never seen before. And that tent that we talk about so much is so much bigger, but can accommodate so many more. And when that circus does leave town, what are you going to be left with? Well, I think it's going to depend on the big, bold things that you did leading up to it. And so thank you, Johnny Infantino, for saying what a lot of us have been saying and saying it to the people that do have the power to make changes and to do big, bold things. Mossy.
You've gotten to know him a little bit through FIFA events, correct? So
he's an interesting dude with an interesting pathway. And look, anybody that's in that position is and has to be very intelligent, has to understand politics, and obviously is a part of a politician. But you also have to, you know, I think be able to be with people and to interact in a personal level that get people to trust you. And again, I don't agree necessarily with everything that Johnny Infantino has done, but you have to respect his longevity, the things that he has done to better FIFA, and the fact that he is willing to spend time on something like Major League Soccer. I don't think he has ever addressed Major League Soccer before, but as this emerging, I think what he would look at it as this emerging asset in the world of soccer, I think it was smart politically. I think it was smart long-term in terms of the thinking of what FIFA is going. We know that FIFA has offices coming to the United States, obviously beyond 2026. And I think he can see how the United States as a soccer nation is going to be more and more important to FIFA and to the world of soccer going forward. But it requires big, bold action and big, bold thinking.
Perhaps we can get him on the pod one of these days.
Yeah, that would be cool. I think he would. I think he would do that. And he's an interesting dude. Speaks a bunch of different languages, and obviously has traveled all over the world and seen a lot about what's going on with soccer on and off the field.
Speaking of this pod, I'll end on this today. We usually record at 9 a.m. on Mondays, but the studio was occupied today at that time, so we were given the choice of 7:30 a.m. or noon. And before you had a chance to answer, I jumped in and said noon. So you kind of went along with it. Are you okay with that decision? How did this feel taping at this time today?
It's okay. I'm a early guy.
You would have liked to have gotten it out of the way.
Yeah, I like to, you know, up and at 'em. You know, I like to get things going. I don't like to sit around, and I don't like to sleep a whole.
It is awkwardly in the middle of the day now, where I couldn't do anything in the morning, and now it's cut into the afternoon. But nevertheless, I'm probably going to go get lunch.
Buddy,
now.
As long as you are accommodated, I am happy. Okay?
There you go.
I mean, this is what we should be doing when it comes to this show. Thank you. Thank you to everybody for reviewing and downloading and subscribing and doing all the different things that you do. Continue to send in your comments and questions using that hashtag AskAlexi or to our State of the Union podcast hotline. Again, 657-549-2297. Thank you to Jim Curtin for making us laugh and giving us a wonderful open and segment during the show. He's wonderful. We will talk to you again later on this week. And until then, and as always, my friends, size the